Well, welcome back, everyone, to another amazing episode of Cellular Healing TV, where we are blessed to have Dr. Daniel Pomper with us to share his cellular healing expertise. Welcome, Dr. Pomper.
Thank you.
And last week on our episode, we started talking about GMOs. And let's continue that conversation today. Does that sound like a good plan?
Yeah, there's a lot to say about GMOs, obviously, because this is something new, I think, that most people are now just hearing about. I was just in California teaching some doctors, and, you know, eating at most of the restaurants there, when I bring up GMO, people understand, they know what it is, right? Oh, no, that's GMO. We're GMO-free. But when you slide just a little bit more this way to Park City or Salt Lake, people don't know what you're talking about quite yet, so I'm sure that's reflective of the rest of the country.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing, and I don't want to get into political conspiracy theories, but in California, they had that proposition where they were going to make people label food, whether it was GMO or not. And to me, it's beyond me that it didn't pass. When we think about genetically modified foods, they don't allow it in the EU. It's not allowed in Europe. It's banned in so many countries. And it's because, let's talk about it. For those who weren't with us last week, what is the potential effect of GMO foods and some of the things we're not even realizing yet?
Yeah, I mean, genetically modified organisms, that's what it stands for, where we take one DNA from something else and we insert it into another plant. And then we could literally direct that plant, to do something else. So GMO really was sold to us by a company called Monsanto, and they made some great selling points that these plants were going to withstand drought better, and they're going to withstand environmental pressures much better. They'll grow better. They'll harvest easier. So it was a pretty easy sell, I think, in the beginning, until farmers started realizing that, in fact, instead of using less pesticide, because that was one of the selling points too, you're going to need less pesticide, which flag should have went out, because Monsanto is also the company that develops pesticides, so they're not going to dig into that revenue stream, so I don't know. But anyways, in fact, now we need more. We're using four times at least, I think, more of the a chemical that Monsanto develops called glyphosate, or glyphosate, which is a nasty herbicide. That now is responsible for tumor formation, infertility. It's absolutely a horrific chemical that's causing nasty autoimmune and different problems. But so they're using four times that. Here's the point, though, is now we've created something called superweeds, because we're using so much more glyphosate that we're creating strands of weeds that literally we have never seen before. It's estimated 130-some different weeds now that are just literally like bacteria in our body that are resistant to antibiotics. That's what's come of these weeds, because of the amounts of these herbicides that we need to use now. This is a big problem, David. So GMO crops, in fact, have more glyphosate. They have more chemical, exact opposite of what we've been sold. And of course, the DNA that's been put into that plant, we're now realizing is actually sharing information with our cells. So this DNA, now we're finding it in our cells, in our gut bacteria. So now we're seeing this really cross-kingdom contamination from one species of plant into the animal species, which is us. And that is holding a host of other problems as well.
And there's a whole downstream host of problems that we don't even know about yet, because, I mean, 5 years, 10 years down the road of constantly having this, I mean, think about it, it's showing up on our genes. It's scary.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's experts that feel that this is, you know, the greatest threat to, you know, in human history to humankind, because we're affecting the DNA, because it's affecting our DNA. Look, Monsanto does a fantastic job of, you know, if you just look who's with other companies, you know, from DuPont, big boys, you know, all the big guys are really with them in this. You know, they're very good at putting up a lot of different studies to show that it's safe, but the independent studies are the ones that were really creating the red flags. Look, you know, I mean, I can have my opinion, we can have ours, but the fact that these other countries have banned it, David, you know, there's solid evidence now that's showing that this stuff, you know, there's major, major problems. You know, it's a growing problem. You know, so it's, you know, the information's out there in droves. The problem is getting the information out. A lot of people, like you said, I was in Chipotle the other day, and with my kids who love Mexican stuff, and Chipotle used to, you know, do a very good job, all organic. Well, they took those signs down because they got nailed with the GMO thing. but they're supposedly going GMO free. So I was questioning them about that. They had no idea what I was talking about. You know, they kept saying, no, we have corn. You know, I'm like, I know you have corn. Is it all, you know, is it GMO free corn? Oh yeah, it's GMO. They had no clue. So, I mean, it's a problem, right? It's just people need to understand. In California, they seem to have a greater understanding about it than some of the other places.
Well, hopefully they'll lead the charge. And in the next year, they're going to require GMO labeling saying this food contains genetically modified organisms. And then what's going to happen is it will raise the awareness and it will start people asking the question, well, what's a genetically modified organism? I mean,
and then
it will raise the awareness, it will raise the conversation. I mean, heck, I remember when they started saying, well, we're going to irradiate food and it's going to make our food safer. I mean, is this all part of the same thing?
Well, you know, we talked a little bit on the last show, so those of you who haven't watched the last show, watch it, because I talked about hybridizations that happened more in the 70s. And a really brilliant guy named Norman Borlaug, we talked about him.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever asked the question, like why gluten problems now? When we were kids, we didn't have gluten problems. We never heard of such things, you know, and the amount of food allergies and things. Well, you know, we crossbred. We irradiated foods, gamma radiation, different things to grains, really, and we changed them. And that's called hybridization or crossbreeding. We created different plants that are better, take environmental pressures much greater. And Norman created something called dwarf wheat, which is these strains of gluten that are very inflammatory, especially to people who have leaky gut, where things cross their gut, these proteins, undigested proteins, cross their gut, end up in the bloodstream, create antibody reactions, inflammation, and a bunch of symptoms, even including autoimmune. So people who have a leaky gut are more sensitive to gluten and these other proteins that have been denatured. Gluten's just a sexy one. There's a lot of other anti-nutrients like lectins and phytates and other similar proteins like gluten that people react to and just have no idea. So that's why we talked about we take grain out of the diet because it is a super sugar. It raises sugar even more than table sugar. And a lot of it has to do with what we've done to these grains, David. So it's not the grains of use that they used to be.
Let's talk a little bit about grass-fed beef since, you know, we're talking about versus grain-fed and GMO-fed beef, you know, or grass-finished. So, I mean, they could – what is grass-finished versus grass-fed and mm-hmm. what does that mean? What do people need to know?
Well, I think you bring up a good point, though. You know, in the hindsight of what we just said with GMO, you know, most cows, most meat that you're buying, you know, people are thinking, well, I don't eat a lot of that. Well, yes, you do, because you're eating meat that is fed grain. Matter of fact, that's every meat that you buy commercially in the store and in restaurants. It's grain-fed meat, right? It's fattier, I mean, in the sense of, you know, it's juicier. I mean, these cows get very big. You know, so grass-fed meat is really what cows are meant to eat, right? I mean, cows are not meant to eat grain. That's why when I go out to restaurants, I like to buy lamb or buffalo or wild game because they still eat grass. But, I mean, I'll tell you what, a lot of restaurants have grass-fed meat. I ate it in California. I ate it at this famous place in Hollywood called Mel's Diner.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a diner. I mean, right on their menu, grass-fed meat. We use only 100% grass-fed meat. Grass-finished, you asked the question, right?
Yes.
So they even knew about grass-finished, meaning a lot of people you ask, oh, is this grass-fed? Oh, yeah, it's grass-fed. Well, they're not lying, right? The cow eats grass because in between grain feedings, they eat grass, you know, or they feed them grass the whole time. Then the last month or so, they feed them what? Grain because
to fatten them up.
Absolutely, to fatten them up before slaughter, which it completely ruins the meat. There's multiple problems with grain-fed meat. It does cause disease. It is bad. Every once in a while, if you had an exposure to grain-fed meat, it wouldn't be so bad, but it is what you're doing, you know, most of your days. So yes, it is the when they say grass finished, they mean it ate grass from the beginning of its life to the end of its life. It's more important how it finishes than what happens back here. And yet we're feeding it grass so we can throw the grass-fed label on it and then finishing it with grain. So if you have a local farmer, you're going to have to put some pressure on. We're going to have to ask them, okay, so is this cow ever ate grain? You know, how did you finish? Did you feed it? You know, ask these questions because, you know, farmers are always saying, oh, yeah, my cow eat grass. It's grass-fed, and it's not. So you have to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, and if you're just going to the store and it says, here's the new one, all natural chicken.
What does that mean?
All natural beef. Yeah, of course, it's a chicken. It's a cow, right?
Anybody can put that on their label. It's natural, right? It's a chicken, yeah. So, and they can get away with it. So, and by the way, it was something we talked about last week. For it to be, well, how do you know if it's GMO? It has to say 100% organic. Now, if there's one ingredient, just organic will suffice. But if there's three ingredients, it can say organic, and it could have a GMO ingredient, this ingredient, oh, and it contains this organic ingredient. So if there's more than one ingredient, make sure it says 100% organic. And that's, thank God, a lot of fighting going on, but thank God that it still means it can't have GMO. In GMO labeling, David, I don't know. Monsanto's putting up a pretty good fight, you know, to really keep that down because they know what's going to happen. If it's labeled, people go, oh, you know, just like trans fats and, you know, as soon as we start labeling, people go, oh, you know, it becomes a selling point that people are aware of. So,
yeah, and
listen, here's the deal.
Hopefully.
Hey, David, if the company was so sure that GMO is a good thing, right? If they were sold, this is a great thing, why do they want to stop the labeling of it, right? Because if I have something good, I want it labeled, right? I mean, let's think of it, you know, if you and I came up with, you know, product X and we put it in foods, right? And product X makes you live longer. It's a super nutrient. Man, we would fight hard to get that on the labels. This product contains product X, wouldn't we? Right?
Yes.
Because it would be a selling point. They know that if it gets on the labels, that the truth's going to come out. That product X, in this case GMO, is not so good.
And we can only hope that it's sooner than later for the health of each and every one of us in our country.
Yeah, no doubt. It's creating a bad cell, you know, changing DNA in us as humans. It's changing your gut bacteria, which is called your microbiome, which is responsible for how good you feel. Depression, it's responsible for your hormone production. So, yeah, this gut bacteria that's being affected by these GMOs and the chemicals in the GMOs, we know now is affecting literally how we feel, how we function hormonally, and affecting our DNA. I mean, we could go on and on, but it's affecting every health thing that matters to us at the cellular level.
You brought up a few things that we haven't spoken about yet, and I'd like to talk about today. You talked about our gut bacteria and hormones, and one of the things that when we talk about our you know, good bacteria in our gut and feeding the good bacteria, one of the things that you and I have spoken about and sharing with doctors who are in your program is, you know, sprouting nuts and seeds, fermented foods. What is that, and how does that do with bioavailability and healing the gut?
Yeah, I mean, when you sprout nuts and seeds, you do make the nutrients more bioavailable. So people's digestion always find that sprouting it, where you just literally soak it overnight in most cases, to where you see just a little bit of sprout come through, that really allows these nutrients to come out. But the big thing, too, is that there's a lot of anti-nutrients in things called phytates and lectins that are reduced. And these are things that can cause a lot of gut problems, especially in those who have compromised digestion, once again, which is 90% of Americans. So by sprouting them, you're getting rid of a lot of these anti-nutrients and denatured proteins. So it's one way. You don't get rid of them completely, but it sure makes a big difference. But it does make the nutrients more bioavailable, easier to break down in your digestion. So, you know, nuts and seeds, soaking them overnight, very, very good idea. And then fermentation, where you ferment them. You know, there's nothing new here. This has been used for thousands and thousands of years, especially before we didn't have refrigerators, right? Because fermenting something where we allow bacteria to colonize, and it protects it from the bad guys that are out here. You know, so when you actually ferment something, you're creating a lot of these good bacteria, which protect the food from the bad bacteria. And then we eat it. But we get all these bacteria into our gut, which now we know, David, are responsible for so much of our health, not just our gut health, which we used to think of, you know, bacteria for gut health. But really, we know now that these bacteria in our gut, okay, which we call our microbiome, that's the new word that's been you know, really phrased, communicate with our cells. And therefore, this cell is able to now get certain function that it would not have if it wasn't for this communication with the bacteria in your gut to the cell. For example, we know that when you lack certain bacteria, you're not able to produce enough of something called serotonin and dopamine. Well, those neurotransmitters help you feel good. So therefore, you could actually have depression. Well, another example is if you lack certain bacteria, you don't produce or you don't make enough of certain hormones that are responsible for weight loss or gain, or even controlling hunger, and therefore you can't control your appetite. There's a hormone called ghrelin. So it's the communication with this bacteria in our cells that enables some of these normal cellular functions and hormonal function and neurotransmitter function, therefore brain function. Look, I think most people watching this have heard the yogurt commercials on television that, you know, 70 to 80% of your immune system starts in your gut. It is this communication that I'm talking about. Bacteria to cell, in this case immune cell, that gives you that. Well, most people, because we don't eat fermented foods anymore, David, so we're missing tons of these bacteria. Here's the bad news. If you're taking all of your probiotics at home, which I'm not against, you're only getting maybe 10 or 20 bacteria when there's 2,000 some that we've identified. There's more.
Sure.
In the human gut. Fermented foods brings so many, you know, thousands that we don't know of yet, that we haven't identified, that you can't put in a pill or a powder. Fermentation is a lost art. But in our world, we teach doctors to utilize fermentation in healing. Because if you can't fix the gut, most often you're not going to fix the hormone condition. You're not going to fix the weight loss. You're not going to fix the immune problem, the autoimmune. So we utilize very unique bacteria, you know, even from things like fermenting foods as a tool to get people well.
That's one of the things that really changed things for me in my world in hanging with you over the past few years is learning about this and especially being able to transform so many people's lives around me. I didn't realize that most challenges, health challenges we have, begin in the autoimmune challenges, so to speak, begin in the gut. And when I realize most of your programs, it begins with a gut healing before you can even do anything else. Because if you don't begin at the root level, it's just like putting a Band-Aid on.
Right. I'm drawing something to help our audience, just to, you know. I think I did this in another show, David. You tell me if I did or I didn't.
I don't. Actually, we didn't. We talked about it, so haven't done this.
I hope you can see this, but it's to your point that this is what one of the reasons why so many people are sick today. I hope you can see this. Tell me.
I can, yes.
Okay. Wait, do I have it written? Okay, no, there you go. Okay. I'm challenged, folks. I'm challenged. But, this is a stool, okay? It's a three-legged stool. So what do we know about a three-legged stool, David?
If we take one, it's collapsing over.
Okay. All right, so at least we got that far. This is what's happening to America, honestly, is a good analogy. So if you don't mind me peering over my little illustration. Over here in the first leg, we have, that says DNA. Okay, so we've been talking about GMO. We've been talking about, you know, these genes that are, you know, expressing themselves poorly because of things we eat. Well, anything can change this DNA. It's called epigenetics. And most of the thyroid, weight conditions, hormone conditions that we see, it's an expression of this DNA that's not so good. So the symptoms that you're sitting at home with that you don't like, most of that's an expression of DNA that you're not happy with. Your DNA is literally from every cell in your body, from these DNA, it's creating it. It's literally coming from your DNA in your cell, right? And it's expressing it in the symptom or the condition that you don't like. Well, when we know that these conditions that get started, these genes get turned on, here's the neat thing. In the last 10 years, we've learned that we can turn on bad genes, but we also learned that we can turn them off. So part of the solution in the epidemic of problems today has to be to turn off these bad genes. My 5 R's of cellular healing, this is really what it does. I mean, part of what it does, when we look at these R's as a roadmap to how you fix the cell, and I always say if you don't fix the cell, you won't get well. Well, if you don't turn off this bad gene expression that you're expressing, you're not going to get well. Look, we used to think that, you know, your DNA was your destiny. If your mom and dad had diabetes or this cancer or that, chances are you're going to get it too. It's not true. We know that these things have to be turned on. The best part is we can turn them off, David. You know, I had high blood pressure in ninth grade. So how did I end up getting rid of it? Because I had it even as my diet turned out better. Well, I turned off that gene expression. Yes, people, my mother, it ran in my family. So does diabetes. You can turn it off. This has to be a part of the solution. Okay, the next leg that has to be part of the solution, but it's also part of the cause, are the stressors that are involved that create or turn on the gene. So these can most likely are environmental stressors, but they can be emotional as well. So we can turn on bad genes after emotional trauma, after physical trauma, car accidents, but most often it's the chemicals that we harbor through our lives that start to turn on these bad genes. Well, removing these stressors is where most doctors go wrong. They don't go far enough upstream to remove the stressors to downregulate that gene expression. Okay? Heavy metals, these things we talked a little bit about. The last leg is where we've been talking about today. This is the microbiome. This is the gut bacteria that really needs to be in all of us in this healthy way. So when we're missing certain bacteria, we turn on the bad genes. You see? So putting these bacteria back in, you know, in the right numbers, very unique bacteria, that's part of the legs of the stool that we need as a solution for this epidemic of these inflammatory conditions, autoimmune conditions, hormone conditions. So when we talk, I don't care, we'll talk for years, but always think back, you know, into these three legs, you know, and this is what I say, well, this, what we're doing now applies here. What we're doing now applies to the stressors. What we're doing now applies to these gut bacteria. So really, all of the solutions that we do apply to that. So I hope that gives
It does. And one of the things that was a perfect illustration, and I understood it. However, when you showed this study, and then we had discussions regarding identical twins have the same DNA. And why, if that's the case, why would is it possible then for one identical twin to get sick with a disease, to no longer be around because of major health challenges? And it's almost like when an identical twin, they're like, well, we're identical, I'm just waiting for my time to come, but then it doesn't happen for the other. So that illustrates, I believe to me, it illustrates perfectly exactly what you're talking about.
It does. David, there's been studies where they take identical twin mice and they can give one group, remember these are brothers and sisters, identical DNA, they expose one to a chemical, a heavy metal or something like BPA, right? That's a chemical from plastics. So they expose this group and they change the gene expression. This group gets extremely obese. This group remains the same DNA. Now, the great thing is in this study, they actually turned off that gene expression by using things that we use in a lot of the products in our cellular healing, that we do. So they turn off this gene expression, and then the mice become thin again. Oh, and by the way, this group became obese, eating the exact same diet as their brothers and sisters and exercising the same. The only difference was the toxin they exposed them to that turned the gene expression on. The bad part was this group over here, their offspring, their siblings, their little ones were born with the gene turned on. So they were born doomed to become obese. And as they became teenage mice, they became fat and obese without ever changing their diet. They ate the same exact diet over here, very controlled. So it didn't matter what they ate and how much they exercised. They became fat because they had the gene turned on from their mom and dad. The best part of the study was they turned off the gene and they became thin again. So it's really unique. And I'll tell you another neat study that's been out there, and we talked about the other leg of the stool, the bacteria. If they take some of these fat mice, and we know that certain bacteria in their gut can turn on these genes, just like the toxins, right?
Yeah.
Well, they make them live with skinny mice. Because mice eat each other's poop, they do, and then the fat mice became skinny. Because they ate the feces of the skinny mice, they shared bacteria, and these now bacteria turned off the gene from the other one, and they became skinny. So don't start eating each other's poop, but it just shows you the interest of bacteria and how it plays into turning off gene expression. Again, it's the other leg of the stool, but it applies to the other leg.
Since you brought this up, I'm going to go in a direction, and you know, and we've had many discussions. However, in hospitals today, when people have major health challenges, especially in the bowels, I mean, aren't they doing some hospitals these days doing transplants of? They clean it up, but they're doing transplants, fecal transplants, and seeing amazing healing. Is that similar to what you're just talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something, again, there's nothing new under the sun. They take the bacteria from one human because we can't duplicate it, right? There's thousands. We're not even discovered yet. And we share it with the other, just like the mice did. They didn't do it the same as far as, you know, the mice just eat each other's feces. They do it much more slick than that through enemas and things like that. But anyways, yes, they share that microbiome. And what happens is that these people get well. And it is really, it's something that is getting more and more popular. You know, if you don't believe me, go to thepowerofthepoop.com. Thepowerofthepoop.com. I'm not kidding. That's a real website. And you can see videos of people whose lives have changed from multiple different conditions, autoimmune conditions, etc. And you'll see these lives change and transform. Why? Because you're taking bacteria and transferring it over to this person. And it's just what we've been saying. It's that leg of the stool that changes gene expression. So, yeah, really novel stuff, David, but it works. It shows you the power of these bacteria.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that... Let's talk a little bit more about, you brought up earlier today, we touched on sugar. And, you know, why eliminate sugar from your diet?
Yeah, you know, as we're talking about the subject of grains, I think it's better to put it this way. You know, yes, eliminate sugar. But then people are starting to eat grains, and grains raises glucose in your blood more than sugar. So let's control glucose and insulin in our bodies. That's what raises in response to eating too much sugar, or in, you know, the topic of today, eating too many grains. It raises glucose. I always say, if you want to age faster than anybody in your neighborhood or your Bible study or whatever, just elevate glucose and insulin. Because what it does is it oxidizes your cell. What does that mean? It's like rust on your bumper, right? I mean, it causes cellular inflammation, and therefore now your hormones can't communicate with your cell. Your genes get triggered. Once the cell membrane becomes inflamed, now you start triggering all these bad genes that we've been talking about all day, right?
Yeah.
So raising up glucose is a fast way to drive inflammation. Look, diabetics, they don't die from diabetes. They die from heart disease, cancer. 68% of them end up with heart disease. I think 70% of all amputations occur in diabetics, meaning literally you start losing your limbs because the degeneration starts occurring, and you literally start eroding, you know, where you have open sores that won't heal. That's because of elevated glucose, folks. You know, and these people, by the way, most of them are on medication, David, you know, controlling their glucose to what they think they're doing. But meanwhile, they're elevating their insulin and glucose are going up and down. And they're aging from the inside out. That's what glucose does in the average person. Then you might not lose limbs, but it's still occurring. One of the first things we do with very, very sick people is we control glucose and insulin. That's why you got to take out sugar. That's why you got to control your grains, you know, because it controls glucose.
And since you spoke a little bit about that, there's a lot of myths out there in regards to fat, aren't there?
Yeah, because I think that people were taught, turn on your television this morning, and I promise you, you'll see a recipe that's low in calories and low in fat, right? And I think there's more even a sexy message of low fat, low calories, and exercise your butt off. Well, when really the studies show, and I'm a big exercise proponent, that you know exercise really doesn't do much for weight loss. You know, it's really that it can be, if you do the right exercise, can be the cherry on the top. And we talked a little bit about that one of our first shows. Mm-hmm. So they can look back at some of the shows, right, David?
Yeah, they can go back. And by the way, the cellularhealing.tv, cellularhealing.tv. And if you want to watch any or get any of the information that we're talking about, just go to drpompa.com, drpompa.com. And there's articles that you've done. There's videos that you've created that take the topics that we're talking about today and go very deep into it. And even showing where they can start learning about the cellular healing diet, the 5 hours of cellular detox, and get a whole lot more information by going to your website.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so anyways, last topic. What was I saying right before that? I was making a point.
I think you and I are very similar. We start going in another direction.
Oh, boy. Anyways.
We were talking about fat.
Right, the fat myth. So, I mean, the point is that the low fat, it's an old thing. We're not getting fat. We're not getting skinnier. We're getting more fat, and we're eating less fat than any country in the world. Really, fat is how you fix the inflamed membrane. Fat cures. You know, again, I want to talk more about fat, I think, on the next show. But let's regard it, you know, maybe perhaps with weight loss, because, you know, the high carb, low-fat diet really is in vogue. So when people are eating low-fat, David, they're immediately replacing it with higher carbohydrates, which really is a problem. And then I think if you can write this down, David, I think we even need to talk about some of our exercise enthusiasts. And there's still a message from trainers and the medical world, so two different worlds, that you know when you're exercising, you need these high carbs. And really, there's some really newer studies that show that that's not true. And we'll talk about something called keto adaptation, which means that your body's able to break down fat in something called keto bodies that your brain can use instead of glucose. But so we'll talk a little bit about that because I think there's a lot of myths there. People that are exercising, then they come home and they drink their big old sugar smoothie, and they're really shutting their body off as far as the ability to burn fat. The low-fat craze has really caused a lot of damage, and we could talk and do a whole show on it. So,
I wrote the notes down for next week's talk. Since you brought that up, I was actually at a networking meeting yesterday, and there happened to be someone who was a health coach there, and they were talking about this weight loss program where every 3 hours they needed to eat. There was these, I call them candy bars, but they were like their food bars that they would eat, and it was giving them their good carbs, it was giving them the protein, everything all in one. And I said, I'm not a health coach, but I hang with a lot of them, and let me ask you some questions. And then the answer was, well, obviously, you and I disagree on a lot of things.
Yeah, right? Because they come from a world that really is, it's some old science, I'll tell you. But messages don't change very quickly, do they? You know, people are holding on to that. Yeah, I would love to have been in that conversation, you know, but eating every 3 hours, you know, is that normal? No, it's not normal at all.
Isn't that spiking it up and down, up and down, up and down?
Yeah, absolutely, but what it's doing is that it works for some people in the beginning because their body has no ability to utilize fat as energy, right, hormonally. And we talked about this on the past show, so, you know, go back and look for it. But, and what happens is because they're eating every 3 hours, then they're not eating, turning their muscle into sugar, and then it keeps their metabolism up. So there's this slight, where they start losing weight, but then it tapers off because humans are not meant to eat every 2 or 3 hours. It's just not feasible. But does it work at the beginning? It does. But is it normal? No. And we'll, again, revisit that show, but we'll talk more about fat, and we can revisit some of that topic next week.
In fact, what we may want to do in one of our future shows is talk about intermittent fasting and how that works and how that actually is natural if we go back to how humans were designed and how we used to eat originally.
Yeah, absolutely. Intermittent fasting in many forms, and there's many ways to do it, is something that our bodies are set up to do. And it downregulates inflammation, it upregulates the right hormones like growth hormone. We become more hormone sensitive, which is really, you know, great. When we do have larger times without eating, yes, in a whole show on fasting, David, write that down. That would be great. Intermittent fasting is something that we utilize as a healing tool for people who are very sick, and it works.
Perfect. So we're bumping up against our committed time slot for people. Any final thoughts that you would like to leave our viewers with today?
Yeah, well, eat more fat. Stay away from low-fat foods. stay away from GMO. Eat organic and 100% organic. It's becoming more important than ever because of the more and more chemicals in our food.
And if you would like to learn where you can get some of these foods, just go to drpompa.com. That's drpompa.com, and you can learn all about these foods, the diets, and learn about our upcoming shows. Thank you, Dr. Pompa, for giving your amazing knowledge, being here with us every single week, and our viewers, and based upon the comments that we get and the calls that we receive. We know that people love it. If you have particular questions, things that you would like, make a comment here on the page right below us on Cellular Healing TV. You can also submit your questions, and we will integrate those questions that you have or topics you'd like to discuss on future shows. And just same time. We're 10 a.m. Eastern Time every Friday, 7 a.m. Pacific. Next week we'll be back with my co-host, Warren Phillips, CEO of Health Centers of the Future, as well as Dr. Pompa. So, Dr. Pompa, thank you for being here. Look forward to seeing you again next week, and thank you, everyone, for joining in. Hopefully it was valuable for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, David.
Thank you.